long as there remain some Israelites still alive who could testify as to how Yahweh had freed them from slavery in Egypt and given them possession of the promised land, Israel remained true to its God, though not without stumbling. But once this generation died out, the people began systematically following other gods. With clockwork regularity, Israel swapped the God of Abraham for the Canaanite gods of Baal and Asherah. And as punishment for their disloyalty, Yahweh delivered Israel over to enemies and plunderers. Nevertheless, in their moments of greatest need, and once the Israelites had repented, Yahweh, mindful of his mercy, repeatedly raised up people who would liberate Israel and restore peace in the land. After a period of apostasy, the people were subdued by the king of Mesopotamia. After they were subject to him for 8 years, Israel cried out to God. In response, God equipped Othniel, the son of Kenaz, to be their deliverer. After he defeated the king of Mesopotamia in war, he served as judge for 40 years. And the land was at peace. But then, he died. After the death of Othniel, some of the Israelites began marrying pagans. Some started adopting the customs of the neighboring Ammonites, Amalekites, and Moabites. Some started worshiping pagan gods. The more they wandered away from the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the more Yahweh withdrew his protection. And then an ambitious, arrogant, and fiery king came to the throne in Moab.
I'm Eglon,
first of my name, commander of the Lion Militia. I have been appointed by Chemosh himself to be lord and protector of this great land, from the Arnon River in the north, to Petra in the south, from the Dead Sea in the west, to Gilead in the east. I'm the guardian of the king's highway. My armies are as vast as the ocean, and my warriors are as fierce as the wildest beasts. Tremble before my name, for I am the one who shatters kingdoms and breaks the will of men of every station. From the highest peaks to the deepest abyss, none can withstand the power of Moab.
With the support of the Ammonites and Amalekites, Eglon launched coordinated attacks on Israelite cities and regions, overpowering their defenses and forcing them into submission. By controlling the king's highway, Eglon implemented an economic blockade, cutting off essential resources and trade routes that sustained the Israelite economy. He then imposed heavy taxes, which exacted a significant burden. He stationed military garrisons throughout Israel, imposing strict control and surveillance. Any form of dissent or rebellion was met with severe punishment, instilling fear and preventing the Israelites from organizing against the oppressive regime. As the years passed, and with every attempt at rebellion quickly and easily crushed, the people eventually gave up. After some time, Eglon retired from military service. Using Israelite labor, Eglon built a palace that stood tall with majestic walls, adorned with intricate carvings and vibrant murals that depicted scenes of conquest and prosperity. Beyond ornate gateways were sprawling courtyards, lush gardens, and bubbling fountains that whispered tales of luxury. The central courtyard served as the heart of the palace, where guests were welcomed, and festivities unfolded beneath the open sky. Towering columns rose around the courtyard, supporting an expansive ceiling that allowed sunlight to dance through during the day and offered glimpses of the star-studded sky at night. Within the palace walls, a labyrinth of halls and chambers awaited exploration. The corridors, lined with finely crafted arches and embellished with intricate mosaics, led to huge rooms, adorned with gilded tapestries, silken drapes, and exquisite furniture. The air was thick with the fragrance of exotic spices, carried by gentle breezes that whispered through open windows. In the heart of the palace, King Eglon reclined upon his throne, surrounded by indulgence and excess.
What do you have for me today?
For you, O King, I have prepared a delightful selection. Here we have succulent cuts of lamb, goat, beef, and venison. These have all been roasted to perfection and seasoned with coriander, mint, parsley, and thyme.
Here, Grape Lion Warrior, we have platters of grapes, dates, figs, and pomegranates, which offer a burst of sweetness with every bite.
I bring you wines from the coastal regions of Phoenicia, the hill country of Judea, and the Arnon River Valley, carefully fermented and aged to create a variety of flavors.
Yes, this will do. This will do quite well.
In maintaining its dominance over Israel, the king of Moab not only insisted that the Israelites pay taxes and tribute, but forced them to engage in pagan rituals and worship Moabite gods. Still, there always remained faithful believers who continued to be true to Yahweh. After the Israelites settled in the Promised Land, Joshua set up the tabernacle in Shiloh as a central place of worship. The tabernacle served as the dwelling place of God's presence among the Israelites and the focal point of their worship. The priests and Levites conducted sacrificial rituals and maintained the sacred objects within the tabernacle. The Israelites would gather at Shiloh to offer sacrifices, seek guidance from God, and celebrate the appointed feasts. In the fourth year of Eglon's rule, a man named Gera, from the tribe of Benjamin, took his wife and young son, Ehud, to Shiloh to celebrate the Passover. As the Moabites continued to ratchet up their repression, it became increasingly hard for Israelite pilgrims to travel to Shiloh. But Gera was determined to find a way to make the half-day's journey. And he did. Late one afternoon, while Ehud and his mother were exploring some of the vineyards on the outskirts of the city, Gera went to visit the temple courtyard. He saw a small crowd gathered around an old woman. When he asked a fellow visitor who she was, he was told she was a prophetess.
"Because of the sin of the children of Israel, Yahweh has withdrawn his protection and given us over to the pagan Moabites. But do not lose heart, in the hands of the Almighty, a young Israelite boy from the tribe of Benjamin will rise. He will become a courageous warrior, an instrument of liberation, and a beacon of hope for his people."
Gera was moved by these words and treasured them in his heart. King Eglon's courtiers and advisors, ever eager to please, would entertain him with songs, dances, and tales of valor. They would recount the king's own triumphs, painting him as a mighty ruler, while he reveled in their adulation. Lost in a world of opulence, the once astute and strategic monarch now found solace in the comfort of his lavish surroundings. Over time, he became increasingly fat and increasingly lazy.
"Garment maker, I need a new tunic. This one bursts at the seams when I cross the courtyard."
"O king, live forever. We have just arrested two men in the marketplace of Geheseth who were calling on the Israelite servants to rise up against you. We also discovered a company of priests hiding in a house in Jericho, praying for the God of Israel to deliver them from Moabite oppression."
"These Israelites are nothing but worms. Their cries for deliverance amuse me."
"O king, remember that it was the God of Israel who helped these people escape Egypt. He helped part the waters of the Red Sea and the Jordan River. He fed them in the wilderness. He helped them topple Jericho and conquer the city of Ai."
"Old wives' tales. Stories of Israelite might and valor were told by our forefathers to scare little children at night. Have we not held sway over these people for 18 years? For lo, these 18 years, have we not crushed all opposition and bent these foreigners to our will?"
"Yes, O king, but there is a rumor that there is a champion from the tribe of Benjamin who is plotting your downfall."
"Do not the kings of Ammon and Amalek stand with us? United, we are a formidable military force. What do I have to fear from these leaderless people?"
In the almost 15 years since Gera had heard the prophecy spoken in Shiloh, his son had grown from a little boy into a strong and wise young man. From a young age, Ehud was raised with a deep reverence for the God of Israel, who had led their ancestors out of slavery in Egypt. He learned the stories of their deliverance and the faithfulness of God in providing for his people. Ehud's upbringing was marked by the teachings of the Law of Moses, which emphasized justice, righteousness, and the importance of standing against evil. Gera and his wife, faithful Israelites, instilled in their son a strong sense of duty and the value of defending the weak and oppressed. Ehud witnessed firsthand the suffering and humiliation endured by his people under the Moabite occupation. Their cries for liberation echoed in his heart, fueling his determination to make a difference. To be continued.